welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today I'm talking with Socrates Rosenfeld, CEO and co-founder at California-based Jane Technologies, to discuss how 420 went this year and what the future of cannabis looks like. This interview was recorded on April 21st, 2025.
Just to start out, first off, I want to give you a congratulations on, again, this is your third year being named Forbes Best Startup for Employers.
Thanks, man.
I really appreciate businesses that make it enticing for people in this industry to want to be a part of this industry, because traditionally it's been very difficult for people to get in, not just get in, but like feel that they're actually a part of it. When you foster this desire within your company, like, how do you curate your company culture to make people want to come and actually work for you?
Yeah. You have to be it. You have to, it's like asking, you know, those books or podcasts of like, hey, this is how you attract a, you know, a partner. And it's one thing to read the book and follow the protocol and, but it has to come from within. It has to be authentic. That's number one. And you have to be it. You can't just say, we have a saying, or not a saying, but we talk about culture a lot at Jane, where we don't list words of values, because I could say that we have a company based rooted in trust. But if I'm not honest with my teammates, and certainly if I'm not honest with myself or not honest with our partners, then that word means nothing. In fact, it's almost the inverse effect, where now you're lying to your people. And so what we say is culture is a feeling. And you'll know what it is by feeling it. If you come and join us on our Friday all hands weekly closeout, Nick, I won't have to give you words around the culture. You'll feel that. And you can put your own words to that. But the feeling is the truth. And so we learned this, or we kind of caught on to this early on, where now as founders and as the early teammates, what we were became our culture. How we interacted with each other was our culture. How we approach product design and development is our culture. How we sent emails, every Instagram post shaped our culture. And so there has to be a consciousness and an authenticity to it. And each company's culture is different. Just like each, I use this analogy where you have a family, Nick?
No, I'm single, unfortunately.
Well, you're single, but you got like parents, siblings.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Two sisters. Mother and father. Yeah.
Yeah, right on. And if I ask you, Nick, what's the culture of your family? What's the culture of your household? You would maybe use words like, oh, there's love and humor and peace and joy. And I don't know, if you ask me about my family growing up, maybe that's a little different. I'm using different words.
There's some chaos in there, but I think with a family, the chaos creates the cohesion, right? Like, you have to work on problems together.
Absolutely. That's a great point. But I would argue that if I asked 100 other people who had families, they would use very similar words. But it's not until I go into that house and have dinner with you guys, I'm like, ah, that's Nick's family's culture. I feel that authentically. And now it's up to me. Do I want to join that full time or not? And so during our interview process, we have a very lengthy interview process where the candidate will interview multiple people. And we say that's not just for the company, but that's also for the candidate to realize, like, oh man, if I just had one big interview day and people were 30 minutes, boom, 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 like, oh, I got the offer and now what? I don't really understand. I haven't really felt the culture to make a real decision. We slow it down on purpose. And then usually we don't always get it right, but most of the time we get it right, where the people who we select to join the team are also selecting to join the team, not based on words of values that we put on our website, but because the feeling that they feel when they interact with our team. And we have a few teammates who have come from being bud tenders or being partners, you know, tech partners. And they're like, man, I work with you guys all the time. I feel the culture. Let me join. That resonates with me. And if it doesn't resonate, I think you framed the question really interesting, Nick, where it's like, how do you lure someone in or how do you attract? We actually don't, that's not our intention. Our intention is just to be as authentic as possible. And the people we attract are the right people.
I was going to say, I think that authenticity is what actually is your driving factor for drawing people in. Is, you know, a lot of people, you can go, especially on the tech side, you know, you're a tech guy, MIT graduate. When you're looking at kind of the tech sector and stuff, you could be a cog in a wheel for somebody like Google, go work for Meta, whoever, maybe eventually work your way up. But when you're working, especially in the cannabis industry and especially in the technology side of the cannabis industry, it's an intricate family.
That's it, man. And that, you know, it's funny that, and we all walk around like, I'm like, all right, who's Nick? Nick's a podcaster. He's tech expert. He has all these, he knows cannabis, but that's not really who you are. Right?
You are
hard to describe, man. Like at the moment I put it into words, that's not you. Right? And so it's been this crazy trip, Nick, of sitting in the seat of founder, CEO, to not name it, but be it. Don't talk about it. Just be it. And sometimes, man, I'm being myself and people are like, I definitely don't want to work with this dude. I don't like this vibe. This doesn't resonate with me. And that, as an early founder, dude, I took that so personally. I was so scared to lose people. I was like, oh, it reminds me of kind of dating early in your young life where you're like, what can I do to keep this person liking me? And that already the premise is flawed. Just be yourself. And what resonates with people, that will attract the right people. And now you don't, no one's acting. I worked at companies where people were acting. Like the moment, Nick, you're the interviewer and I'm the interviewee, now we're acting. And that's not good or bad. Now we're just like, cool, here's the role. But if we're just two human beings trying to connect and talk about some very interesting things to help each other learn and grow, that's different now. Now we can really engage. Now there's real trust. And so that's how we've thought about our culture that way, is less thinking and more being.
Well, you know, at some point you yourself was somebody who was considering the cannabis industry for yourself. You know, obviously, you know, I mentioned earlier that you were an MIT graduate, but you have a little bit more robust background than that. I mean, Apache helicopter pilot, I think for 7 years. I mean, you've had a storied background. When you're looking at your own pathway into cannabis, like, what was the inflection point for you this is something that I can not just enjoy from a cultural standpoint, or I just like smoking. This is something that could be a career.
Love it, dude. You frame the questions in a really interesting way. Here's why, dude. So the first time I tried cannabis, I was 29 years old. I just left the military. I was like a few months out. And I consumed cannabis. And what cannabis did to me was it allowed me a safe space within myself to be myself. And I would early on, like, you know, I had this idea about Jane in 2015. I still had a full-time corporate gig. And on the weekends, man, I like tap into the California medical cannabis culture and community. And here in Santa Cruz, I feel like this was part of the destiny of Jane, where I would witness companies like the Santa Cruz Veterans Alliance, for instance, veterans, growers, who would give away cannabis to veterans once a month. I was tripping out. I was just like, you just give this away? They're like, yeah, this is medicine. We give this away. I got to meet Dennis Perone literally on his deathbed up in San Francisco and learn about what he was all about in terms of advocating for cannabis as a medicine to help his community. Also a Vietnam veteran, by the way. I got to meet with Steve D'Angelo and others, Val Corral here in Santa Cruz, where I could see, what this plant really represents is the ability to just be yourself. It'll give you power to do that, not fake it, you know, not pretend. Because when you pretend, you stand out. And there are derogatory terms for people in the industry who are pretending. They don't really care about the plant. Anyway, they just want to make money, man. Okay, that's okay. But let's not forget, we're not slinging cheeseburgers. This isn't the next infused seltzer. This is a medicine that has been used since the beginning of mankind to help people be themselves. And so to tie it back to your question, sorry, man, I'm long-winded, but to tie it back to your question on, was there ever this conscious decision of like, okay, how do I make a career here? It was more, holy shit, cannabis is the only place where I feel safe to be myself. So I'm going to figure something out. Technology, whatever I have to do so that I can create a space where I can continue to be myself. And Jane is a manifestation of that. And not just for me now, Nick. What we've created together with all hundreds of employees that have been part of this journey is we create the space. Jane is almost, and I don't say this with disrespect, but almost the excuse for us to continue to go deeper into ourselves. And yes, there's money and profit and career progression and all these things, that, but those are derivatives of what we are all really trying to do and protect a safe space to be ourselves. Because in my opinion, that's what cannabis is. When you consume, really mindfully consume, you let go of everything that is not you, right? Bob Marley has a famous quote, the herb, you know, reveals me to myself. And that's why I started Jane. And that has now manifested into a technology company with all these things. So, and I promise to get more pragmatic in my responses to you, Nick.
No, you're all good. I mean, because it's a good insight into, again, because if you take people that are in technology, especially in California, most of the people, they go to Silicon Valley, they try to create an app, not trying to rock the boat with anything necessarily controversial, such as, you know, obviously cannabis is
sure,
a Schedule One narcotic. They just want to get simple money, get their unicorn status and get some payout, right?
Correct.
I don't see a situation in which, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, obviously you're the one in the situation, but I don't see a situation in which somebody goes into cannabis on the technology side and says, hey, I'm going into this because I want to become a billionaire. Because there are easier ways as a technologist to get rich, right?
Yeah. So, oh man, I wish your statement was true. Unfortunately, I think what we've seen, and I'm not saying every tech company out there, there are real people, well-intentioned people who are really trying to advance the industry and help through technology. There are others that are trying to turn this into a quick buck. Fortunately, a lot of those folks are gone. They're on to the next shiny object, I'll say. And I think what makes Jane and other tech companies who are still around unique is that our mission runs much more deeply than just profit. And I would argue that you take any massively successful company by the traditional definition of how much money they're making, and not a single one of those companies, outside of perhaps maybe like hedge funds, were created and made massively successful because the founder and the early team wanted to make a shit ton of money. Sorry for swearing, dude.
No, you're good.
Apple, Amazon, and I'm not saying now they aren't that, but early on at the stage that we're in, couple hundred employees. You know, we're not doing billions of dollars yet in profit. Why are we doing what we're doing? And if, like you said, if you want to turn a buck, I tell us, you know, to the team, like, there are easier ways to make a dollar, dude, than
100%.
you know, not, we don't consider it grinding, but it can be seen as grinding here in the industry. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think at some point, the customers who buy your product, who use your service, can feel that. It's do you like music, Nick?
Love it. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite artist?
Favorite artist, if I have to go classic, man, I mean, I listen to a lot of reggae, so
Yes.
probably Bob Marley.
Okay. Stop right there, dude. You and I could be best friends. I have the Exodus album that's been in, I think, in my car for over like 12 years. My
Nice.
wife and friends love it, let me tell you. Anyways, Bob, right? There are people who who like I think of like American Idol, where some people have dreams to be like, hey, I have something to say to the world, but most people just want to get famous. Bob Marley never wanted to get famous. There's a great story where he's sitting in Chris Blackwell's office with Peter Tosh and Buddy Wailer, the original guys. And they signed this record deal to Island Records. I don't know if you've ever heard the story, Nick. And Chris Blackwell's there, and the guys read the contract. And Buddy Wailer gets up and he's like, I'm out of here, dude. You're going to make me tour all these Babylonian places and hang out at these nightclubs. And like, dude, this is not why we did this, make a bunch of money and be celebrities and everything. And eventually Peter Tosh left as well. They turn to Bob and Buddy talks about it. He's like, damn, I was the only one to really walk out of that office. And Bob told him, hey, brother, we have a message and I got to get my message out there. And if it's through Island Records that we have to do this, okay, we think of series A, B, C as the same thing. Money is the same thing. It's not our purpose for being. It certainly helps. And we're not here to run a company where I have to go back to investors and ask for more and more money. We'd like to make our own money. But the purpose of Jane isn't to make money. The purpose of Jane is to use money to go and complete our mission. And that's provide access to a plant that helps people around the world. And that's how we view money and profit and loss, et cetera. But a company's that their mission is to make money, what are they going to do? Shortcut the product, right? They're going to shortcut their service. They're going to shortcut their hiring, et cetera, et cetera. Eventually that's going to catch up to you. And so we say money is the indicator for us creating value, not the other way around.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's a beautiful way to actually look at it as, a founder of a company is, I want to be able to utilize, money coming in from investors in
Right.
order to accomplish the mission goal, not necessarily in order to enrich myself. And I
Exactly.
do believe there are a lot of brand owners that have that same mentality. You're right. There are certainly some that came in with a mentality of how do I make a quick, merger and acquisition and jump out? How do I,
Exactly.
but the thing is I don't believe that those people are ever really pushing the paradigm in any one real vertical. The only one that came close, I think, might have been MedMen, in trying to push cultural shift, but they still
Yeah.
were, again, money hungry. But like, again, they did do a lot as far as cultural shift. When you're
Yeah.
looking at a technology company that's trying to, again, entice people in, especially, people who are MBAs, people who are traditional market people. There used to be that scarlet letter of, working in the cannabis industry. Obviously, you're kind of one step removed necessarily from plant touching yourself. You don't grow, you don't manufacture. But when you're going through that interview process, is there any point in which, somebody who's looking to join the company takes a moment of hesitation, being like, yeah, I've got offers from other companies. Do I really want to be here? And if that does occur, and I'm not saying it does, but if that does occur, is there something that you do or can say to these people to be like, look, this scarlet letter doesn't exist anymore. That died a long time ago. It's a remnant memory of people who, you know, couldn't get their banking done right, or couldn't get this or that done right.
Yeah.
What how does it affect you, or does it at all?
We definitely get candidates who are like, I don't know, you know, I got this other offer. And what we tell them is a maybe is a no. If it's a maybe for you, it's a no. We, you know, you should probably go take that other deal. This needs to be a yes. And we're fortunate to be in the position where we can say that to candidates. We weren't always there, dude. We were like, oh my God, we have someone that actually might want to join the team. But even back then, I've been there, Nick, where I've charmed and convinced someone that was like, I don't know about this cannabis thing. That didn't last long. And so I've learned my lesson now. A maybe is a no. A yes is a yes. A no is a no. A maybe is a no. And I'm not here to convince people to join the team when really deep down in their gut, I don't really want to join. Okay, well, dude, don't do this. This is too hard, too intense, too crazy. But then you get people that are like, nah, hey, cannabis helped my dad. Cannabis helped me. Cannabis, oh, dude, I'm so passionate about cannabis legislation and reversing prohibition. And, oh, that's who we want on the team. So if we have to convince someone, as much as we would want that person to join the team, it's probably a signal to us. And we're a mature hiring team at this point. We're like, hey, you got to, and rightly so, like, If I'm out there trying to convince someone to be my friend, and they're like, I don't know, Sock, you like surfing and you like reggae and you like cannabis, and like, I don't know if I could you imagine if I'm like, oh, but I do these
trying to convince things. Them.
Yeah, like that friendship. So that's brutal. And that's brutal for every time I call up, you know, that friend to be a hangout, they're gonna be like, oh. I don't really want to hang out. I don't want people to be like, I don't really want to go to work. We want people that are like, hey, it's hard, it's intense, it's uncertain, but damn, I want to be here. I feel like this is where I need to be. Those are people that are going to do great work. And it's not the individual. It's just the setting that they're in, you know?
I was going to say, you curated that environment 100%. Yeah. It's very rare to find, again, companies that have the amount of, because everybody that I talked to, and again, obviously I'm talking to you right now, but I've talked to a couple people in the background that have worked for you in the past, cool. People that are currently at the company, they all speak nothing but high praises for you. So again, like, I'm going into a situation where I'm talking to somebody who this is kind of your first, you know, real foray into making a technology company, and it's been nothing but successful. So being able to pick your mind and try to understand, you know, what you've been able to cultivate is absolutely phenomenal. So I, again, appreciate that. One thing I do want to touch on a little bit, and it's a little bit of a shift. Since you've been in this industry so long, and since you do have such a giant eye, so to speak, on everything that's going on, what have you seen as a shift in the industry since you first launched? Because I know that obviously from your days in dealing with the medical side of California with the 215 era, it's definitely shifted since then.
Yeah.
But since you've launched as a company, like, how has the industry evolved in your opinion?
Well, in many ways, man. I think there was a lot more willingness to have an open, integrated ecosystem where everybody was seen as a potential partner back in the day. Now, a lot of people see others as potential competitors. And this is what happens when people get afraid. And I think that's what leadership really does. I, as you mentioned, I was in the Army a long time ago, and you go through these really tough trainings, man, where they restrict stuff food, resources, shelter, as a way to condition you to be able to endure those things. But what I've always kind of I found the most interesting is that when real leadership is being done, when there's real leadership there, no matter how hard or how scary the world might be, the leader brings a sense of safety and trust and togetherness. The absence of that, now it's like, well, okay, when can I get my mind first? Let me get mine first. I'm scared. There's a lack of leader. There's a leader causing a lot of fear. And there's a lot of fear in the world right now. Not just in cannabis. There is in cannabis of like, when are we going to legalize? Is this current administration going to shut us down? What are tariffs going to happen, right? And the more fear, guess what ends up happening? Now it's me versus them. Now I got to get mine before they get theirs. Hey, I'm just looking out for me. And we see this in the country in general.
Right?
Because there's a general fear that's just buzzing in the background right now. And I'm not trying to get political, but it's the truth.
No, 100% is the truth.
Right? And now we're like, us versus them. I need mine. Oh, shit, that sucks for them, but I got to protect mine. And I've seen this now go, in coming back to the cannabis industry, it's a great question, go from like, hey, I'll take a meeting with you. Maybe we can help each other out. Oh, okay, we can't. There's plenty of, fish in the proverbial sea. We can go out. We can do our thing. Now it's like, hey, this is zero sum. And we fight that at Jane. We really resist this zero sum mentality. And the simple framework is, does this create win-win opportunity? Does Jane win because others win? If that's the case, let's do it. If Jane wins and others need to lose, you know what? Let's really scrutinize this decision. And we try to optimize the wins and minimize the losses, because that's not growing the pie for the industry. And so as a general theme, Nick, and I can get more specific, but I've seen win-win now go to win-lose. And I am hopeful, and we're doing our best here at Jane, to just hold the line and say, let's continue to build win-win opportunities, because ultimately, that's really good business. Right. If you win and I win, well, shit, like we're going to grow this thing. But if I win and you lose, there's a timeline to that. Eventually, you're going to try to outmaneuver me, et cetera. So we're trying to create win-win opportunities around every corner we can. And that's helped been our guiding light, really, as we move forward and as things get more scary as kind of we continue on. I hope that we have leadership. The last thing is, I hope we do have leadership to quell the fear and just everybody just calm down. Everybody's going to be okay. Can we take care of each other?
Well, you mentioned something, really interesting in the sense that with the economy and tariffs, I mean, obviously, cannabis, we don't import cannabis.
Right.
But we do import packaging and we do import tubes. So every piece of the chain, including manufacturing machines, everything else gets imported. At what point, in your opinion, at what point do you think that the economy or tariffs could start to affect the cannabis industry? Because everything that I'm hearing is that it's going to.
Yeah, I think, will it have an effect? Of course, just like it will have effect. This is a global economy, so you're going to be affected to it one way or the other. Fortunately, in cannabis, though, we're talking about the periphery. We're talking about the fringe stuff, packaging, et cetera. It's not really the main stuff, thankfully. So we are a lot less affected than other retail verticals, of course, that are getting a lot of imports overseas. I think too, what we've, let's rewind back to March of 2020, March, April, May, June, when we thought the world was ending, at least certainly, that was a real concern on like,
it felt like it,
right? The economy is crumbling. Oh my God. we saw people gravitate. They traveled less. They purchased less. One thing that didn't change, cannabis. And cannabis thrives in boom economies. Cannabis thrives in bust economies. Why? Because it's not a luxury good. It's not a nice to have. As we said before, this is a need to have. This is a medicine for a lot of people. And I can certainly speak for myself when I say, when the world is upside down and it seems to be swirling in chaos, cannabis and Mother Nature, surfing, hiking, those are my reprieves. Those are my, for lack of a better term, escape to come back to myself. And we've seen that no matter if you're a red state, a blue state, people who are old, they're young, city, rural, black, white, man, woman. The one unifying thing that this country has, and I'm struggling to find now, music is getting politicized. Cannabis to quote our friend Bob, is the healing of a nation. It's true. And I think that I am not worried that the tariffs will have an effect on the demand, the consumer demand for cannabis. Things like packaging, et cetera, we'll have to wait and see on how the industry responds. But the one thing is true, people need their cannabis, they want their cannabis, and it doesn't matter what the market is doing, they will go find a way to get their cannabis. And hopefully it's continue to be through legal channels, and it's on us as the legal industry to make it as accessible as possible. We're playing our role in software. We have great brands doing great things. We have great retailers doing great things. Can the government and the regulator step up to really align the regulations with the truth? And the truth is, people need this plant. And so how can we do this and not overtax it? How can we make this as accessible as possible?
Yeah, well, I mean, the regulators, and this is something that I've spoken to a lot of brand owners about, but the regulators, to me, I think their biggest drawback is they don't actually have somebody who's in cannabis as a regulator, because these are just a bunch of bean counters. They don't really know the industry. Same thing with the CDTFA. You got people collecting or adding taxes that don't know anything about the industry itself. And they're trying to equate it to other industries like alcohol, which is a failure. So,
Right.
when you're looking at kind of how the industry is shaping up, obviously you mentioned the pandemic. 2020 was a great year for cannabis, especially in California and other states where it was deemed medically necessary by the state. Are we seeing, I mean, we're one day after 420, are we
Yeah.
seeing a resurgence of sales similar to 2020 due to that type of, economic uncertainty? Obviously, people say, cannabis, alcohol, things like that go up in a recession. Are we seeing that type of trend?
It hasn't slowed down. We have more consumers. I'm speaking from the Jane ecosystem, which I think is a leading indicator of the entire industry at this point. More consumers consuming legal cannabis today than ever before. Are the prices compressed? Yes. Is it being consolidated at fewer retailers? Yes. Are there fewer brands out there? Yes. But the leading indicator for me and the team at Jane is cannabis demand continuing to grow to grow. And the answer is unequivocally yes. And so that for me keeps me optimistic. Now, if one day, cannabis has proven that it's not helpful, which for tens of thousands of years, it's proven to be the opposite of that. And people are like, oh, sorry, I'm not going to consume this because this is poison. Some could be say that about sugar, because some could say that about alcohol. Those things continue to go, right? Then we have to take a hard look and be like, okay, what are we doing actually here? At least I'm speaking on behalf of Jane. But as long as, man, like, we have 39 legal states. We're banging on the door of like every state in this country having some form of legal cannabis regulated. That's massive, man. Right? So let's not lose sight of how far we've come. And yeah, it's hard to be a successful retailer, certainly in California. It's hard to be a successful brand. You have to really be savvy and understand your customer and meet them where they need to be met. It's hard to be successful as a tech company in this space. But those that can be successful, thinking win-win, et cetera, doing it for the right reasons, the demand, the amount of value that you can capture, speaking as a business owner, that's still a massive potential. We're talking tens of billions of dollars. I think cannabis one day will be bigger than alcohol
Oh,
globally.
hands down. I think
Globally.
it's starting to get there now.
I think you're right. I think you're right. In the US, we're starting to see that shift. And so as long as that continues, we're going to be all right. And I, despite the headwinds of lack of regulation, despite overtaxation, despite all these other things, despite the illicit market not having to pay taxes, et cetera, despite the lobbyists from alcohol, et cetera, trying to push down cannabis, like the plant itself, the industry is extremely resilient and will find a way. And that's part of the fun, Nick. And that's what you sign up for when you're trying to take a market from prohibition into the legal ecosystem. And we hope to have a seat at the table for when that day comes, at Jane.
Well, I definitely, I know that as we start to look at federal legalization, there's been rumblings for years. There's been rumblings of rescheduling, just from a chaos perspective, right? Like you take a look at California. You have your state regulations, you have your county regulations, you have your city regulations, and then that goes from state to state to state to state, and everybody has their own deal. When you get into a federal legalization standpoint, how do you amalgamate all, like, do you even amalgamate all of those rules and try to create a unified set, or do you leave it? I feel like, especially if you're going to do interstate commerce, you can't have those types of,
Right.
disparage, disparities between regulations. How do you unify all that?
I think, the federal government's going to do its best. This is a when, not if scenario, by the way, too. Like
Of
people are
course.
doomsday, like, oh, this is never. It's like, it will,
No, it's
man.
happening
Yeah,
100%.
it is happening. Exactly. The present tense. I think you'll have some baseline federal guidance, federal tax, and then there will be some flexibility for states to tax on top. There might be the ability for, California to do commerce with Oregon, et cetera. But man, that's above my pay grade. And I don't know. One thing
Well,
I do know is that, software will, and hopefully Jane Software will be in a place where we can make that as easy and as efficient and as fair as absolutely possible.
just from, just from a generalized standpoint, like to me, it would make sense to have, specialized zones, right? So, for instance, you do your manufacturing in Oklahoma, you do your growing in Northern California, Washington, Oregon, and then you disperse product across the country. Is something like that like a fever dream,
Oh, man.
or because again, you'd have to reset all licensing at that point, or do you just let each state have its own thing?
I think this will look now, I'm This is the when I will use an analogy that cannabis is a lot like wine, in that in the sense of, you want the terroir coming from, who doesn't want California cannabis grown in, Humboldt? That's the dream for someone in Connecticut to be able to access that. But there's also like, oh man, maybe shout out to Connecticut. They got, I don't know about Connecticut wine, but maybe there's a decent, Connecticut wine, for instance. So I think, I don't want to say anything's a fever dream, man. I think that would be incredible, but that's probably years away. I think initially it's going to be like, cool, there's a standard federal tax. Here it is. States, if you want to do on tax on top of that to make it easier or harder for your constituents to build businesses around cannabis there, it's going to be up to the states. Can you ship wine directly in the mail, direct to consumer? That probably took years, decades after prohibition of alcohol to allow. So I think it's a wonderful end state to dream of. Do I think it's going to be overnight to when the feds say, yeah, this is legal. Now you can start shipping cannabis in the mail. Probably not, which is just an excuse for people to come out and visit us here in California, man.
But even from an intellectual property standpoint, just the ability, like you said, everybody wants Humboldt cannabis or everybody wants California weed. I go to Amsterdam every single year, and when you go to the coffee shops, you see the little, either the California bear or the US flag next to, the American strains, and they're double the cost. So for brands to be able to export and create intellectual property in new countries, I
The
think that's the one
really
thing.
interesting one.
Well, it's the one thing that I think the United States is going to fall way behind on, because you have all these other states that are now doing branding in all these other countries. We can't do that. I mean, granted, you have some of the, some of the brands, like Wizardry and Doja that I've seen doing branded jars, or they're doing a licensing deal over there. But in the vast majority, people aren't. Like, is the, if legalization does happen, I think that that's going to be the first rush, is like, hey, who can export the most into these tourist destinations like Spain, Germany, and in Holland.
I mean, just man, I think that's a really exciting, man. I'm not even thinking like that, Nick. That's great that you're thinking internationally, but that's right. Like, wow, how cool would it be to have California cannabis grown in California, but now be able to be consumed in, Paris, France at a premium? Yeah, that's incredible. And I, yes, the US is, I could see it kind of falling behind places like Europe. But I think, again, when, not if, we're able to ship our product overseas, it's going to be in high demand. And I think, vice versa, I think it'd be really cool to be able to try, stuff grown in Southeast Asia or Central Asia. That'd
I'd
be
love to get some
incredible.
Piatella out here from Spain.
Yeah,
That'd be
right.
nice to get some Piatella
Oh,
in Southern
some
California.
African land race, like,
Yeah.
and I think it's already been happening for millennia, trading in seeds and things like that. Is there a way that
Sure.
we can formalize this and bring this into the modern day? I hope so. In the spirit of being able to share different terroirs and products around the world, because that's really how you grow a global industry. And dude, when we're talking about that, something has gone extremely well.
Oh
So
yeah.
let's keep
Oh,
fighting
it,
through that.
well, and looking at, again, looking at the numbers, for 20, one thing I do have a little bit of curiosity on is, I know there's been a generalized shift in consumer categorical demand. Like, people have been moving more into edibles, people have been moving more into dog walkers, pre-rolls. Is that still continuing, or have we seen some like sleepers pop up in the last, couple months?
I'll give you a sneak peek. I don't know if our PR firm will love this, but I'm going to give you a sneak peek. The top five categories, number one is flower. 45% of all sales were flower. So that stayed relatively consistent. I think when I started 10 years ago, it was like 60% of the basket was flower. Vapes now are close to 30%. Edibles have been around 15, 20%. You got pre-rolls at 10%. So that's held fairly consistently, Nick, that a lot of people are like, oh, flower, no one wants it anymore. Makes up two out of the five orders. And I think it'll stay that way because man, I'm excited because have you heard of a steam chalice?
A steam chalice? No, I
Yeah,
haven't.
dude. All right, as a reggae fan, in Jamaica, the Rastas smoke with a steam chalice. And in Southeast Asia, this has been a very ancient way to consume cannabis, where you're actually not combusting the flower, you're like pulling heat through the flower.
Right, like kind of like a hookah. It's using
Yeah, exactly.
convection instead of conduction. Yeah.
Exactly right. And I love edibles. I love trying different concentrates. There is something about consuming the whole flower in its pure form, that is, with good flower, that I think is, you can't really replace it. Now, do people want to consume smoke? Do they want to whip out a chalice? Do they want to, I don't know how to roll a joint, I don't want to smell like it, et cetera. So there are a lot more convenient form factors, but just like I think we're gravitating back to whole foods in our food, I think the flour will have its place forever, but you'll see a lot more derivatives surrounding that, and that might meet the consumer where he or she needs to be met.
Well, is it possible that, you know, the flour stability, or, you know, people staying or sticking with flour and pre-roll is like, you know, this new consumer mindset that it's not all about the THC, but it's more about the olfactory experience, exactly. The terpenes, lesser exactly. cannabinoids that you can't get in an extracted product or an isolated product.
Exactly. I think we're starting to see that. I was in a local shop that shout out to Three Bros in Santa Cruz yesterday, and they had a whole wall of pesticide, as it was advertised, pesticide-free, sun-grown, all-natural cannabis, and they were testing it like 21%. But they were flying off the store shelves because you try it once, you're like, this is what I thought cannabis was, versus, you know, the 40% melt my face, one strong cannabinoid or one strong terpene. That's like, you know, eating GMO food. And I think certainly here, at least in California, and it's not for everyone, dude. Like, some people I talk to, they're like, nah, dude, I want the most powerful stuff. And that's great if that's what you want. But let's have a balanced offering as an industry. And we're starting to see that come back. Let's connect again, maybe next 420, with some data requests. And maybe we could pull that stuff to be like, oh, people are actually gravitating towards more full terpene rich, less THC focused flower or products.
Yeah. Well, because I was talking to Ted from Alien Labs. And one of the things that I kind of mentioned was like, let's take THC as a staple, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If THC truly is the end all be all, then on the consumer market, wouldn't THCA crystalline be the highest selling product? I mean, but it just isn't. In fact, I don't know how many brands even sell that anymore. So it's like, you know, I feel like a lot of people are starting to really figure out, you know, hey, terpenes, lesser cannabinoids, and olfactory full experience is where I
full
really want to.
Exactly.
You know, where that's I really, really
that's real high. That's a real and it's high's been used as this derogatory term, like, you know, are you high? Like, yeah, I love to get high, real high. And maybe we could tie this back to what we started out. Real high is real you. Like, oh, I'm just completely okay with being me. I'm going to use the love word. We're like, I feel love for myself. Now that's when you can start spreading love to everybody else. And again, I am not convinced that that's a bad thing. I think that's a beautiful thing. Self-empathy and empathy for the world is how we heal and grow and create community. And I think cannabis has proven that it represents that for so many people in so many communities around the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, cannabis is you know, more often than not, you know, a social experience.
Yes.
And so being able to, you know, go hang out with your friends, consume, have that memory. I think more and more people are starting to realize like that's the memory that they want versus alcohol, especially, you know, the 21 to say 30 crowd.
Amen.
So I know I don't have you for too much longer. Again, I appreciate all the time you've given it. For you know, considering it's 421, I being a technologist, I do want to ask you a little bit about AI and machine learning. I know that you guys kind of put out your own information about what you guys are doing internally late last year. I'm curious as to the level of where we're at as an industry with AI and machine learning, because I know that, you know, as general people within you know, the general vernacular, they understand ChatGPT, they understand Gemini, like they understand these large language learning models, but how is that being incorporated in cannabis? And are we at kind of a 1.0, or are we starting to get to the point where we're going to see like AI employees?
I don't know if we'll see AI employees. I think we'll see employees leveraging AI a lot more. And that is not a linear growth. That's exponential. And that will compound over time. And so how we treat AI is a real powerful tool that whether you're in engineering and design and tech support, in sales, in HR, you are learning how to leverage AI internally to make us more efficient. Not to replace, but to augment. In cannabis, we're at 1.0, dude. And that excites us beyond measure here at Jane, because there's so much potential. I would say music, the ability to personalize music down to the individual listener is like, oh, that is beautiful as someone who loves music. If we could do the same with cannabis, and we are doing it here at Jane, to where when you go on a menu, and we know, Nick, you've shopped with us before, or through maybe two or three actions that you'll take, we're like, ah, Nick loves flower. And he loves flower at this price range or with these terpenes. Let's merchandise the menu to show Nick those products in a curated way. Here's the important piece, though. Explaining to Nick why we're showing those products to him is really important. And so, hey, we're showing you these products because we think you like X, Y, and Z. Is that right? And man, to be able to do that is so exciting. The fact that we saw this a decade ago, Nick, we were preparing for this. And so we amassed this universal product catalog with 2-3 million SKUs, where now we've tracked over a decade how each individual SKU gets purchased, what gets purchased along those SKUs, how often does someone come back to that SKU. And this is over billions of data points. And we have a machine learning team that's been at Jane now for 3-4 years that have been creating personalization algorithms. We call it MyHi, to where now we can integrate that into our e-commerce offering. We can integrate that into our advertising offering. We can integrate that to help purchasing managers understand what products they need to purchase, when and where, how to price, what deals, what promos, what brand, and helping brands out. And so I think cannabis is ripe to integrate AI. And just like we've integrated technology into this space, we as stewards at Jane have a responsibility and bear that responsibility, and we take that responsibility seriously with, hey, are we here to manipulate and dupe you into clicking, or are we here to educate and inform you about other products that you might benefit from? And we, again, like, if our goal was just to make money and get you to click, dude, yeah, cool. That is not with full consciousness that we're integrating AI into the space. But if we can do it as a tool for the user, the consumer, to find what they want and what they need before they even know it, that's the dream, dude. And I think we're going to roll this out here very soon. So stay tuned.
Yeah, because I know that, you know, kind of the whole AI bud tender thing, like, I know that people have been testing that for a while. I've seen issues where people have used AI for, say, greenhouse management, where they're looking for plant diseases in a large scale.
Right.
Is there a potential, because I know you had mentioned purchasing managers, but is there a potential where AI could be used, say, in purchasing negotiations between, say, a breeder and a grower, between a grower and a manufacturer, between the manufacturer and the brand, between the brand and the retailer? Like, at what point is that all going to be always a human-to-human interaction, or will there be a point in time when the cannabis industry is, you know, almost like commodity traders or anything else, they have AI algorithms working for them? Like, is there a point where cannabis reaches that?
Yeah, I think it's not just a cannabis question. It's a world question. It's an all industry question. Like, how do we view, as technologists, how do we view the future of AI? Is it just agents interacting with agents and we're just like kicking it on the beach? I would say there will always need to be a human element. I think you will have some humans that will say, just set it and forget it. I know this works. This is the formula. This is great. But you will always have some humans that are like, okay, let me be the validator of this. You can suggest some things. And I think that's probably more realistic to where we're headed. But we have a long way to go. And what I'm interested in is, can AI help the purchasing manager place their orders at the exact right time? And can AI also help the cultivators and the manufacturers create the products, the right products at the exact right time based on future demand? And if we can do that, I think that is the future. That's where we're headed. And that's not a cannabis thing. That's an entire supply chain thing that is going to affect all retail verticals here at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see AI take a stab at mapping cannabinoids and stuff like that. Because, I mean, there's thousands of cannabinoids. We don't even know what they are.
Yep.
Same thing with terpenes. Like, you know, we're still learning the baseline on terpenes and flavonoids. And, you know, maybe AI might be able to start to figure out, okay, well, we know factually that if you mix these thousands of minor cannabinoids with all these things, that you will guarantee this effect.
Based on your specific endocannabinoid
biology,
system,
yeah.
Right? Like
exactly.
That's real personalized medicine. And that's a beautiful thing. But again, let's not forget that it's in support of human beings. It's not in replacement of. And so that's for every technology company to have a hand in one way or the other.
100%. Well, I've taken up so much of your time. I really appreciate every single thing. I really appreciate everything that you've done, not just from the technology side on the industry, because I do feel like there needs to be more engineers and there needs to be more, you know, high level people that are forward thinking in this industry beyond just on the plant side, but on the technology and the supportive side. So again, really appreciate what you, your co-founder and everybody at Jane Technologies has been doing for the industry. What is next for you guys? You guys have been scaling so rapidly.
We are, stay tuned on the personalization stuff. That's the next frontier for a lot of industries. And I think for the cannabis industry, again, how does personalization unlock win-win opportunities for the entire ecosystem and continue to elevate this plant and grow this plant? And that's where we're focused next. So, man, it's been a real pleasure, Nick. Thank you for everything you're doing for this space too, man. And yeah, keep sharing your voice with the world, dude. It's important.
We would like to thank Socrates for his time being on today's episode. For more information on Jane Technologies, make sure to visit them online at www.iheartjane.com. That'll do it for us today. Thanks again for listening, and as always, make sure to stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.